Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hello again, coming to you live from the pastoral community of Vachon Island, Washington. This is the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show, broadcast live from the Gene Bosch Voice of Vachon studio in the bustling and bodacious heart of Vachon Island. That was the voice of our founder, Brian Brown. Together we, the Brieflies, strive to keep Brian's brilliant flame alive by bringing you weekly episodes of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy, and always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. Our current Briefly panel includes many bright lights of Vash on Maury Island, one being legal beagle, mediator, Fulbright scholar, and treetop flyer, Craig Bellis.
Good morning, Kevin. It's great to be here.
Good morning, Craig. Also, historian, professor, down under aficionado, and our own guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Hallman.
Hey, good to be here.
Likewise. Truman O'Brien is at our control board. He's piloting the big board. In real life, he's also a pilot. He's also airport commissioner of Vachon Island's airport and a reformed Texan, we understand.
Well, that's pretty hard to come away from that last one, I can tell you.
I can understand that. Amy Dreyer is our newest Briefly part-time Politico fairy maven and self-professed full-time shenanigans coordinator. Amy, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Good to see you here. Hey, we also want to welcome our small talk guest today, Washington Conservation Action's Vice President of Campaigns and also a proud parent of a Vachon and Maury Island honeybee, Lennon Bronsema. Good to see you here, Lennon.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
All right.
We love the honeybees.
The honeybees. Yeah.
Were you in here when we did the singing?
I was. There was nothing more special than a group of, 5-year olds singing.
Yeah,
trying to sing.
I think we've done that 3 times, and I'm sure we'll do it again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So the honeybees are always awesome to have on the show. So I'm glad people are hearkening back, remembering how sweet that was. Mm-hmm. Hey, myself, Kevin Jones, avid defender of justice, mariner, a backpacker, and today still recovering from my first ever participation in Vachon's Passport to Pain cycling event. I made it here, so that's good. so why don't we check in around the table with our panel about their highlights from the last week. And Truman, how's things going with you?
Well, I have to tell you, I have lived on the island a cumulative total of about 36 years, right? And in that entire time, I had never been to the Yacht Club.
Mm-hmm.
Can you believe that?
Yeah,
is that because they won't let you in?
Well, probably, yeah. That's probably one of the reasons the gate's barred, right. To us.
A boat that's parked like a stone's throw away.
I know. But I have to tell you, I am probably never going back again. Oh. That trail going up and down that hill is a killer. Holy cow.
Yeah, rope toe.
You definitely need a rope. I thought I was going to have a heart attack before I got to the top of it.
It's actually my measure. I figure when I can't make it up the hill, it's time to sell the boat.
Time to sell the boat. Well, I tell you what, I would be close right now. Yeah, I'm proud of you guys for hiking up and down that thing. That's pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's my week.
Yeah, yes, the Vachon Vachon Yacht Club aerobic exercise training.
It took a full week to get up that damn hill.
Dare we ask why you were gracing the presence of the Yacht Club?
Well, actually, I got a tour of Kevin's boat. I was looking at purchasing a like vessel, and I just wanted to get one more look at it. Unfortunately, the one that I was looking at sold, so that one went away, but... still a sweet little boat. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah, and we had a chance to check out the Vachon.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Still floating and doing great. So, yeah. but Bruce, you're a hill hiker up and down the concrete ramp, a formerly dirt trail. So, anyway, how's your week been?
It's been a good week. This weekend was my daughter's, our third daughter, our third child, who's a daughter. It's her 47th birthday.
Oh, baby.
Which
oh.
just sort of like, it's sort of like, how did that happen? But it does happen. Yesterday, I had the incredible experience of the unveiling of the Lucy Duran mm-hmm. Memorial mural at Chautauqua Elementary School. And it's what is a 20-foot tall kind of mural, all done by hand with spray paint. So it's a very fascinating thing to go see. But Brandon Raynon from the Puyallup tribe was there and talked about Lucy and her important place in Vashon history as a person who was removed from the island during the Puget Sound Treaty Wars, but fought the U.S. government in the courts to regain recognition of Native entitlements in the Puget Sound area. So an interesting and inspirational figure for our elementary school students to see every day in the playground. And then, of course, Saturday was the Husky game. Sort of took me back to Super Bowl in 2015 when it was sort of fourth down and one and the Seahawks blew it. Well, it was fourth down and one and the Huskies blew it. It was sort of like, oh, my God, this Seattle is cursed.
Well, the Seahawks won.
Yeah,
they did. The Seahawks
and the Mariners, if we want to talk about
that. That's right. That's right. That's right.
There is a silver lining somewhere if you look hard enough, right? All right. Amy, hey, how's your week been?
Hey, yeah, it was pretty good. I went to a potluck this weekend, which was of note because, you know, I usually hang around this group of kind of meathead, literally reprobates. You know, we just grill. Like, our potluck is like, well, are you bringing chicken? Because I'm bringing steak, you know? Like, and yeah. then we just kind of, like, stand around with, like, plastic forks and not plastic forks. No, Kevin, never. You know, but this was legitimate. It was over in Docton with my former high school civics teacher. So, you know, bringing it all the way back around. But, you know, they finally cleared the hurdle of King County and built their house. So they had a little potluck. And it was really good. People brought salads.
Whoa.
Amazing, right? All kinds of great. So there was like an eggplant, like a Greek eggplant dish. And then come to find out, my friend has been sitting on this, like, she's an incredible pie baker. So there's blueberry pie, there's apple pie. So it was a really lovely, really lovely Saturday evening, just kind of like taking in the Olympic Peninsula and the views from Docton and meeting some Docton neighbors. Met a couple FBI agents. Whoa, who knew that?
Ooh, hey,
I know,
hey.
They're out there. They're out there on Maury Island. Oh, wow. I know, okay. keeping an eye on it.
Men in black.
The women in black.
I know, right?
I know. That's a good question. Are they involved in the Maury Island incident?
I don't know.
They're still investigating.
They are. We'll have to follow up. But yeah, I would say that was a highlight. And then went to a post-wedding reception on Saturday night. So good old weekend on rainy Vashon.
Perfect. Yeah.
Excellent. Hey, Craig, how's your week been?
It was great. You know, you just reminded me, Amy, we sometimes refer to Vashon as Weird Island, Weed Island. I think it'd be more accurately called Potluck Island.
Yeah.
We have our share of potlucks on Vashon. A way of life. No, I had a great weekend. I had all sorts of things going on. I'll just mention two real quick. On Friday, went to the Coop again. The organization Flipped the Vote was there. And was raising money, and the Mortgage Lifters, the great band that was playing right after them. So it was a good gathering of individuals who are quite socially conscious, and hopefully some people who had some deep pockets. And then on Sunday, I went to Bowie Rex and the Boogie Army, his boogie over here at Sugar Shack, which was just a hoot of a good time, the music and the dancing. So between those two, I did, you know, had to take a few ibuprofen.
Okay.
I just got a notice here. I forgot, you know, I need to mention a little PSA here that October 15th is going to be the Voice of Vashon at the theater. We're still looking for contestants. If someone would like to sing, we're looking. Everybody's looking at
staring at Craig.
Waiting for him to go for it. And I think a couple of years ago, Guido Perla won it.
He won the first one.
Wow! Yeah, the first one. And nice. Anyway, this is going to be a really fun event at the theater. So I invite everyone to come out on the 15th. It's a little fundraiser for Voice of Vashon. It should be really fun. So
maybe we could put together, you know, a backup group, you know, a little doo-wop,
a little quintet
kind
is
of thing going
is?
On there yeah. in the background.
It needs to be way back. Way back.
Down by the marina, maybe, yeah. Well,
the Briefly's yeah. doo-wop.
I yeah. see potential for shenanigans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
There you go.
Good. Excellent. Well, thanks for that public service announcement, Truman. And Lennon, how has your week been working out for you?
It's been great. The kids are back in school.
Yeah.
Just started, you know, a couple weeks ago. So there's some quiet in the house. And it's a busy time. Obviously, I work in politics. So this is the time we're out talking. So having a bunch of fun events and getting to find people who care about these issues and talk to them. It's been great.
So your daughter's a sixth grader? Is that right?
No, she's in second grade.
Second grade.
My son just went into kindergarten.
Okay.
Fun.
All right. So are they typhoid Marys? Do they bring home every disease known to man?
You know, I'm a little in front of this year. About 2 weeks before school, I started giving them an emergency packet every day.
Good man. All right.
It didn't really help. They still came home with
Okay. I just had to ask.
Yeah, you get introduced to all of Vashon, Maury Island that way.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Excellent. Let's see. I've been kind of busy. I missed, I think, the last show because I was out backpacking the first time in the Enchantments, Goat Rocks Wilderness. Which is pretty spectacular spot. I had 3 days out there. Did a summit on a class 3 rock climb, and I realized I hadn't been on a rock climb for a little while, so it was kind of, you know, sketchy, but here I am. So, you know, that was all good. And then, of course, Passport to Pain. I wasn't quite sure how that was going to shape up. I had gotten real familiar with the Weenie, which is like 30 miles and 3,300 vertical feet. And I rode that course before the event and thought, man, I'm not sure I want to do another one of those right away. But I was inspired by the handlebar streamers. They were talking to me the whole day, so I had to go and ride the weasel and make sure to get those. So they're sitting on the bike now, proudly displaying its handlebar streamers.
All right.
Yeah, we're good with that.
Now all you need is a couple of playing cards in your spokes.
That's right.
I could be a real marauder, a bicycle marauder on Vashon. Hey, one thing interesting that we didn't cover when we were talking to Bruce and Jeff here a couple weeks ago is that the numbers they give you for your bib numbers are you're basically the oldest person gets the lowest number. Yeah, so when you're, you know, somebody's passing you on a hill out there and they're like sporting number, you know, 189, it's like, okay, going by, you know. And then you see somebody in front of you who's like, wow, it's a little bit, you know, higher number than me. Okay, I'm motivated now. So I don't know if they intended that, but, you know, it's pretty interesting worked out.
That's good.
So I'm waiting. I got a while before I get to single digits, but I was number 39.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
And a friend of mine was number 4, and I saw number 2.
Whoa.
So, you know, there's some pretty...
Did you get a figure on how many people participated total?
There were apparently 400 signed up and 320 actually came out for the day of the event.
Wow,
so, you did great, Kevin.
Yeah, it was a big... Well, the Vashon Island Rowing Club, so that's an awesome fundraiser for not only them, but for the island.
They make those batteries and those bikes smaller and smaller.
We had some e-bike. There's no turning you down. If you're on two wheels, you're good to go.
I didn't know that was permitted.
It is. So bring your e-bikes next time and show up because it's a lot of fun. All those passport stamps and, Apollo 13 and all kinds of interesting checkpoints you go through.
So a 90cc Honda probably wouldn't make it, though, right?
Say never. And also say this morning I did get out a chance to get out on the water, which is a little bit lumpy, but the Olympian, Jacob, was out there coaching us this morning. So that was fun. Quite a few boats out at 6 a.m., if you can believe that. And I didn't fall asleep afterwards, so we're good to go. All right. Hey, looking ahead from here, September 17th, there are only 2 days until Professor Larry Hubble's first authoritarianism rising session at the O-Space. And it is free. They do ask for a donation if you're willing. But you do need to pre-register. So that's openspacevashon.com. I when I got out to the website, sometimes I had to click on their logo in the upper left-hand side of the screen to get the events page to pop up. But go check it out and sign up and see you there on Thursday. I plan to be there for that one. 23 days until the next Indivisible Vashon meeting at the Land Trust Building, 7 p.m. on Thursday, October 10th. So if you want to follow up on...
This is my birthday.
Lennon is saying today about initiatives. We're going to be talking about those as well. So you can stop by the Land Trust and happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah. 49 days until the presidential election on November 5th and 125 days until I personally believe, hopefully, a new president will be sworn in on January 20th. A brand new president. Brand new, never before tested president is, I think, what I'm looking for. Let's see. Today in history is pretty important day today. 1787, the U.S. Constitution is signed. So that's a pretty big day for us. In 1849, Harriet Tubman escapes from her southern plantation slave owner and, of course, went on to help other enslaved people escape that terror that we had in our country for so many decades. And let's see, in 1978, the Camp David Accords are signed, creating a peace treaty between Egypt and Israel. So maybe whittling away at some of the frustrations that are exposed in that part of the world. So a pretty big day in history. All right, hey, let's shift our focus to the initiatives that will appear on our ballots this November. Thank you, Lennon Bronsema, for bringing us up to speed on these issues so our Brown Briefly listeners can make a more informed decision about these items on our ballots. And I'd like to start out, Lennon, if we could. There's multiple initiatives on the 2024 ballot that'll come out in November. You'll probably get it in October through the mail. But before we get into a discussion of each one, could you tell us who is behind these initiatives?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're just 31 days until those ballots arrive, and you can vote on these initiatives and for your new president and lots of other things on that very extensive ballot. Mm-hmm. But these initiatives are there because of one man, Brian Haywood. He's a millionaire hedge fund manager from California who's moved here and took $6 million of his own money to pay for the signature gatherers to put these on the ballot. And he's not... It's not surprising probably to you, those of you in the room, maybe not on the radio, not a friend of the working or middle class. And these are initiatives essentially give himself a tax cut and a break for some big corporations.
Kind of puts a new meaning behind the initiatives from the people, doesn't it?
Yes. I don't think they intended one person to be the person who put these initiatives on the ballot.
Yes. One person with $6 million to hire a bunch of... Okay. Well, we don't go there.
Why not?
Yeah, that's a huge deal.
Yeah, we've done our disclaimers here at the beginning.
Okay, let her rip, right?
That's right.
Then maybe you can tell us a little bit about the idea of the initiative, the referendum, the recalls, and sort of those are all progressive early 20th century kind of political reforms, and how do they work in Washington State?
Yeah, absolutely. It comes out of the progressive era. So most of the Western states have initiative or referendum. And the idea behind it is that people have another option to hold their government accountable if the government is doing things that the majority of people don't agree with. And so you see that throughout our state's history, where people have decided to make laws that benefit the majority. Some of the more popular ones from the environmental space where I work is the Growth Management Act came out of an initiative process when the state decided to not put limits on growth where people can build, and that initiative was created to make sure we do have some growth limits. The Marriage Equality Act in our state came out of a referendum process where people said actually people should be able to marry who they want to marry. And the idea is you get enough signatures. It's, I want to say it's 10% of the people who voted in the last presidential election sign their name on a petition that says we should have this vote. And in the olden days, like last year, it just used to be a bunch of people would get together and go ahead and put some initiatives, try to gather signatures. And they would hire some people to help him with that. But what happened in this last year was this guy, Brian Haywood, he just paid $6 million for a signature gathering firm to go out and just sign, get people to sign. We can have a discussion about our First Amendment, but there's no law against what you can tell people what to sign these things. And so they were able to get a lot of signatures deceptively saying, sign this so your gas prices will go down. Sign this so you don't have to pay more taxes. And none of which is true in any of these cases, but, you know, good fodder to get someone to sign. And initiative signature people are paid per signature, so there's really incentive to get them to say whatever to get people to sign.
This is really just a continuation of the Tim Iman sort of approach, isn't it? I mean, so it's been around since the 90s. It's just intensified with one person. I mean, Tim Iman was one person, but he often had numerous backers, whereas this guy is just one guy. Is that correct?
Yeah, you can think of him as Tim Iman with a gigantic bank account. He's really going out for his own interest and to raise his own fame. He's been quoted in the Seattle Times saying, you know, he was doing this in part because he would like to be governor of our state, and this is a way for him to raise his profile. He's not really doing this for any of our interests.
So it's always confusing to me that, I mean, you hear about initiative, for instance, the one I'm going to ask you about is 2066. Well, what in the hell does that mean, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, these initiatives have titles as well, don't they? So when I hear Initiative 2066, tell me a little bit about that and what it's about and what people are calling it. Because it's not, like, if somebody asked me about 2066, it's sort of like, I have no idea. But if they ask me about the initiative to change this or that, you know. So how are you seeing that? How are you sort of bracketing it?
Yeah, well, and to make it easy for everyone, it's just vote no on all of the initiatives. You don't need to know any of the numbers. The numbers are there because they are the number of the initiative presented to the Secretary of State. So this happens to be the 2,066th initiative that was sent to the Secretary of State this year, and this one qualified. But the frame of 2066, this is essentially the initiative that will increase your energy costs and reduce energy efficiency across the state. If you have to call it something, it's the one that will increase your utility rates.
But that's not the way they describe it, right? The initiative originators don't describe it. How do they describe it?
Very, very heavy-handed government. They describe this as the initiative to stop the government from coming into your house and ripping out your natural gas stove. That is their claim. This is not at all what it does. And the initiative itself is in response to a law passed by the legislature this past spring that required Puget Sound Energy, the state's largest utility, to come up with a plan on how to become more energy efficient. And some of that planning is how to reduce the use of fossil fuels. It only applies to Puget Sound Energy, no one else. And so even if this were to pass, this doesn't actually impact anyone outside of Puget Sound Zone. It's just fascinating. But you should also vote no on this, because I think we all want more energy efficiency in our homes and cheaper utility bills.
Just so people understand, people ask me this question all the time. The move to do away with appliances, which is an interesting concept, it doesn't apply to propane. Whereas on Vashon, so many people have their stoves and appliances propane. Propane is, my understanding, a much cleaner product. It's not obvious. It's not the greatest product, but it is a much cleaner product. So just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah,
there may not be a need for this, even for if you're tend toward this kind of initiative.
Yeah, and this again, the initiative has nothing to do with individuals' appliances.
Yeah,
it's about giant utilities and how they are planning so that we aren't stuck with the bill 30 years later. We're actually asking them to come up with a plan, corporation, for the inevitability.
Right.
Yes.
And so when our voters get those ballots, I'm assuming the number 2066 is going to show up, but is the official title Prohibit State and Local Governments from Restricting Access to Natural Gas? Will that also, Lennon, be on the ballot, to your knowledge?
Yeah, so each initiative will have a ballot title, mm-hmm. which is not that, and then a little sentence that says what the initiative's about.
Okay, so that is not the ballot title. It's some other ballot title.
Correct. And then it will ask you to do your research, right? And it'll give you, you'll also get their voter guide book, which will have the big pro, con, you know, con and mm-hmm. supporting statements on each initiative. But yeah, and then the new, not for 26-6, but all the other initiatives have something new in our state called a public impact investment disclosure statement, which says what the other three initiatives actually target the state's budget. And it says, what is that loss if those are passed? And so that is on the ballot, not buried anywhere else, but right there next to yes or no.
And so that's a perfect segue into 2109, which says that to repeal the capital gains excise tax imposed on long-term capital assets by individuals with capital gains of over $250,000. And, you know, I went in and looked, researched that a little bit. One of the things I always like to look at is who's supporting and who's against. That always gives you a great idea about mm-hmm. the implications of it. But I found it really interesting that I think part of the their sales pitch is the fact that it would exempt from capital gains real estate assets and certain retirement accounts, interest in privately held entities where the capital gain is at or less the attributable to real estate owned by the entity, assets sold under the imminent threat of condemnation, assets used in a business that are depreciable or qualify for being expensed, timberlands and dividends from real estate investments and timberlands, commercial fishing privileges and goodwill from the sale of franchised auto dealership. I find that very interesting. Mm-hmm. So, but the main effect of it is it's not going to affect anybody unless they have capital gains of greater than $250,000, correct?
Well, yeah, so we currently have a capital gains tax.
Correct.
It's limited capital gains tax, and it really only applies to multi-million dollar stock sales.
Right.
Everything else is exempt from it, and this would repeal that.
Right.
And over the last tax year, just about 4,000 people in Washington State paid that tax, mm-hmm. and cumulatively it generated about $2.2 billion in funding for education.
Schools, Benjamin, yeah.
Yes, mostly schools, which...
And I did want to jump in. I'm doing a part-time contract on 2109 for small business outreach across the state. And so, yeah, it is a very narrow tax. It's if you sell stocks and bonds and your net profit is over $262,000 now with the new tax code, then you pay 7% of those net profits. Yeah. And it is. It's 4,000 people. Most of them were in King County. Some of them were up in Whatcom County. But it also will drain, it's $2.2 billion over the next 5 years out of a lot of child care subsidies. So we're talking to small businesses and, keep Washington working essentially, right? Because a lot of those child care subsidies will be revoked mm-hmm. if 2109 passes. And we all know how important child care and access to child care is to keeping Washington working. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
So this is another great case where Mr. Haywood, is that right,
came
to decide he wants to relocate from California to Washington and decides the capital gains tax might be a negative impact on his lifestyle. So he wants to get rid of it, it sounds like to me.
Yes, and for him and his buddies, right, that's what it applies.
Yeah.
I think ironically, he had not paid our capital gains tax until he started cashing out to fund his initiative work. So this is the first year he has to pay in pushing his agenda.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's a sort of really interesting to see, tip of the hat to friend Carrie Harrop for calling it the Let's Gut Washington initiatives, right? But yeah, cumulatively, as you look at it, it really pulls the safety net out from under so many Washingtonians, and it just really sort of, it is Tim Iman. I love that Tim Iman with a pocketbook. Cause as we know, now that we live downstream from what happened, we know what's going to happen, right? When you pull the funding on all of this, we're living in it right now.
Mm-hmm. And I think, Amy, you were going to follow up on another initiative with Lennon.
Yeah, so 2117, that's the one that's taking up all the oxygen in the room, right, so to speak, on its way to giving us more oxygen, hopefully. Mm. But yeah, talk a little bit about 2117. We know the impacts will be various. You know, here on the island, Islanders for Fairy Action, we have endorsed the no on 2117 campaign because we know how much it's going to impact the ferries and the transportation budget. But, you know, there's huge sort of far-reaching impacts to 2117 and some that I didn't even know about until started learning a little bit more. So kind of can you run us through the diversity of impacts?
Yeah, absolutely. So 2117 is the initiative you should all vote no on, but as of all of them. But 2117 would stop Washington from having its carbon market, which forces the largest polluters in our state to pay for pollution, and then it ratchets down over time. This has created a couple billion dollars worth of revenue in the last 18 months, which has gone to things everyone likes. Cleaner air, cleaner water, money for ferries. These are things that would be eliminated without this revenue coming in from the big polluters. The most devious part of this initiative is that if it were to pass, it would prohibit any future pricing of pollution in our state. So big polluters scot-free if this was allowed to pass. So we really need to say no on this one. The money that it's going to, the law itself was written in a most progressive, equitable way, 30% of the money raised has to go to communities most impacted by pollution. So the places that have historically had the most pollution from heavy industry, communities near ports, people around downwind from heavy industry, right? The money needs to go to them. And then 10% of the revenue goes to tribal nations, which is the first law in the country that mandates that these communities that have had the least access to resources is getting some of the most benefit from our from this law. But the health impacts are huge. The decrease in asthma that we're going to have over time by reducing these air pollutants is obviously super important for our health. The wildfire risk and mitigation that this has been able to fund, just having more firefighters around helps keep our wildfires smaller. And then I think the transportation is one we can have a long conversation about here, but it is a part of the transportation budget. New boats for our ferry system, maintenance for our ferry system will be eliminated if this were to pass.
Hmm. So essentially, it seems like what this law, the Climate Commitment Act, has done is it keeps the polluters from being able to pollute our air and water for free. And so many economists have been saying for decades that the way to change that environment, that situation, right, is to have them pay for that, put a tax on that. So this would essentially remove that and re-incentivize them to, well, would remove a disincentive for them to quit polluting. So, okay, that's what we're up against.
And I'm right, sort of the way the revenue is generated currently with the carbon tax is they have an auction essentially, right? Mm-hmm. Where you get to pay and bid on how much it's going to cost you to pollute, essentially. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right? So, you know, there's the state raises billions of dollars. And is there an annual sort of, like, how often do they do these auctions? And
They're quarterly auctions.
Yeah.
And it's market based. So it depends on a lot of different factors, how much is raised, but the money, whatever is raised, goes into reducing pollution. And I think probably most importantly for our state, what this law has done has put it at the forefront of the new economy and the new jobs that are going to be created in the country. So you have the Inflation Reduction Act from the federal government coupled with the Climate Commitment Act, making Washington the best place for creating the new things that people are going to be using throughout the country. We have the most advanced battery manufacturers now based in Washington. We have two fission companies based up in Everett actively working to bring commercial scale fission, which is a wild concept, but that's happening. Solar manufacturing in Whatcom County, we're actually making solar panels in Washington and then putting them on buildings in Washington, all possible because of the revenue generated by this and the tax benefits from the federal government that allow us to make Washington the spot for the new economy and lets us do what we do best in Washington, which is like innovate and lead with technology, things we know how to do.
All right. Well, we've passed out our NO-ON-2117 wallet cards to the briefies here around the table, so share freely on the island. Craig, I think you had a question.
I do. We're saving one of the, well, this is the last but not the least initiative we're going to discuss. It's the one with the highest number, Initiative 2124, and might, a number of people may not understand this one, even more so than the others. This initiative would allow all employees and self-employed individuals to opt out of paying the tax and receiving benefits under the Washington CARES Act. The state's long-term services and supports trust health care program. Can you tell us what that would mean and what the Washington CARES program is all about?
Yeah, so Washington State did something no one else has been able to do. Just a few years ago, we created this program that all workers pay into a long-term care savings account that you can access when you need to provide long-term care. So whether it's your spouse needs to have care at home because they've had an accident, or you have an aging parent that needs help with dementia, and you're the caregiver, you can access this insurance that will pay you money to be giving that care. And it's available to everyone that is a worker and pays into that system. And it's portable. They made a fix to this last session. Even if you move to another state, you'll be able to access that money to be able to provide long-term care.
And doesn't Medicare cover this?
No.
Okay. Not that was a leading kind of
right. Absolutely. No. This fills the gap that used to be covered by private insurance, and what unique here is because it's provided by the state, there is no denying of anyone with pre-existing conditions or other issues where these private insurance companies could say, oh, you're not a good bet, or we're going to charge you a whole bunch for that care option. This is available to all of us. So what's at risk is that safety net that these workers now have to provide that long-term care, and it will allow private insurance to come back in and charge higher rates for what we already all have at this point. There's almost no one supporting the overturn of this. Private insurance isn't stepping into campaign to say vote yes on this. There's you don't see any individual step in here. This is essentially fodder for the other side, if you will, to try to scare them into having something to vote for, that somehow the state shouldn't be in the role of helping to take care of its citizens. So this is, we got to vote no on this one as well.
So it's, in a way, it's like the Affordable Care Act in that if people opt out, the whole program lessens, shrinks, does it not?
Yeah, and that's the beauty of the system. Everyone pays a very little bit, and it's there for when you need it.
Well, it's like Social Security. I mean, you've got people who are never going to use it or who may use a limited amount, mm-hmm. but everybody's paying into it. It keeps the process going. But so it's basically the same thing, right?
And I think the budget analysis on it is they extrapolate from if this passes, of course people will opt out, and they really do feel like it will collapse the system, right? That there will be enough opt out that it will collapse
there
the system
won't be enough money.
In its entirety,
right.
You know, sort of. So.
And this is money you earn, right? This is not a system that's just out there, but it's very much like Social Security, yeah. right? You yeah. earned it. You yeah. paid into it. You yeah. can access it.
Right.
And taking it away at this point is taking money that people have earned away from them.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lennon, other than telling, having our listeners tell all of their friends to listen to this episode of The Brown Briefly, there must be a bunch of other resources out there that people can use to get more information and to, you know, when they're having that chat with their uncle around the dinner table, they say, hey, need to focus on how to
always those uncles.
These. I know.
Now the aunts that are
they're getting a bad rap, I know, we're promoting that. So what other resources do you think people could use to help spread the word?
Well, like a one-stop shop for you would be defend-washington.com. It's just defend-washington.com. We're going to lay out the initiatives. It says really what's at risk, and a sign-up page if you want to take action to do more is right there. On all the social media, they have great content there. But like you said, it's about talking to a few individuals and making sure they understand. When people open their ballot, this is the first thing on their ballot. 2066, the very first one. And the first four things they get a vote on is this. Before they get to president, right? They have to go through this. So making sure they understand to vote no on all of them, and then they can vote yes for their presidential choice would be the best path. If you're not interested in like the actual initiatives and you're just like someone who wants to get involved in broad support, there's a campaign that Conservation Action runs called Call for Climate Action. And that's just about turning people out to vote. It's not about an issue in particular, but it's making sure people know how to vote and that their ballot arrives. So that's happening now, and we'll pick up speed as people get their ballots.
All right.
Yeah, and talk to your friends over on the east side of the state. Talk to your friends over at Kitsap, right? Down southwestern Washington, for sure. Like, you know, Vashon, I think, will perform well from a progressive standpoint. But, yeah, expanding those conversations as much as you can, you know, to folks. Or if you're in associations, right, or if you have, a business network or a caregiver network, really, truly getting out of our bubble and talking to folks who are sort of outside of Vashon, I think it's hard as an activist on Vashon, right? Because, you know, I'm not going to go door knocking here. That's something I usually do, right? It's knock a lot of doors and drop some lead around the neighborhood. But, you know, so how, you know, and Kevin, maybe you have some thoughts on, you know, how can we on Vashon sort of talk to our neighbors across the state?
Well, certainly the relationships, the one-on-one conversations are always the most effective. So, yeah, I like the parts of the state you talked about because they do tend to maybe lean in the direction of the initiative, the fellow who created all these initiatives. There's also politically, in terms of legislative and door knocking, our indivisiblevashon.org website in the very top of the banner has a get out the vote page. And you'll eventually find our candidates page there, which talks about those groups who are actively asking people to come help them knock on doors, you know, and that's typically going to be in Bremerton Gig Harbor area, in that southwest Washington, Marie Glusen Camp Perez, as well as in the Bellingham area and Whidbey Island area. So those are a few areas that you could find on our resources.
Yeah.
Don't know, Leonard, if you had anything to add to that.
Well, I was just going to add, like, it doesn't really matter where you live in the state. This is dangerous for everyone, you know.
Mm-hmm. So just to be clear, it's 58 cents per $100 earned. Is that correct? I think I just read that.
Long-term care?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the rate is currently. But you're only allowed to take 36,000. I mean, you get 36,000 back. It's a maximum benefit.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So how does that pencil out? If I put into it for 20 years, how does that work out? I mean, I'm just trying to get what's the value. What do I get back for my money? I mean, I'm investing 58 cents per hundred.
Truman, you and I can't do the math in the airplane. You expect our guests to do this on
the fly? I thought those numbers should be out there. I mean, they got to be out there if you pay into it so long.
I'm feeling a need for a spreadsheet for sure.
Yeah. No, I mean, is there?
Well, and I mean, I think the question isn't so much how does it pencil out as an individual, but You know, how do we create a social safety net where, but I think it's a good question, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, are we talking dollars and cents here, and I get out what I get in, but, you know, kind of the argument might be that a healthier, safer Washington where, you know, your neighbor is being taken care of, you know, sort of.
But
I think it's a reasonable question, right?
Yeah.
So what is the kind of, how do we create a community that is overall more healthy, safer in the long term, right? How do we keep Washington working? How do we keep Washington innovative, right? And, you know, long-term care may be someone who, you know, they need to leave the workforce to care for a spouse. And, you know, maybe it's a 3-year commitment, but, you know, when they come back to the workforce, their, you know, their livelihoods aren't devastated, for instance, right? We kind of retain a more resilient community and a more resilient state, because we all know that, you know, a safety net is the best possible thing we can create to keep innovation going, to keep people working, right? To keep us all healthy.
The one question I have, though, is that $36,000 is not going to go very darn far. Mm-hmm. I can tell you right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're looking for any kind of long-term care, I mean, we're looking at, you know, a very short period of time.
And I think my understanding, this is not to like pay a facility. This is, you know, truly your spouse stays home and cares for you. Is that correct?
Yeah, and the idea is it provides you the bridge to mm-hmm. figure out what to do next.
Yeah, I was going to say short term.
It is short term.
Yeah.
And that you're not just, oh my God, what do I do? Like there is this thing.
No, that's what I was trying to get at, because I mean, I know that, I mean, if I pay in $100,000, I only get 36 back. That goes, well, that doesn't seem fair. But at the same time, like I say, it works that you're paying to help everybody else make the system work. I mean, I understand how that works.
Yes. Before this was a law, I certainly was not paying. I hadn't thought, well, I should take out some private insurance for my long-term care needs.
Exactly.
And like if something had happened, I would have been out. Like I wouldn't have had any help, right? And
right.
so this is that sort of step up to like, let's get you on the right foot. And then the portability aspect I think is so great, in that as a worker now in these, no one's working at the same place for 50 years anymore, right?
Right.
And it's like a lot of people move here and then take a job and leave somewhere else. The fact that they're going to have that benefit is really wonderful.
Well, it's like the railroad unions. You know, the railroad union, if you're working for them and you're paying into their care program that they have, it doesn't matter where you go or what you do, it follows you. And, I mean, that's the same sort of thing.
Yes, and I think very much to a longer conversation we could all have about just the need for a better national healthcare system that where states have to piece this together to provide, you know, what we need to be the best in the world.
Yeah. And I mean, the long-term care one, it really is kind of the quiet one. Nobody is talking about it as much. And I, if I'm correct, right, it's not income qualified. Anybody can apply for this benefit, which, you know, you could sort of posit it as, well, you have money. Why do you need to apply for this benefit? But, you know, I would ask, well, if my person gets sick, why do I need to lose my home first before I can, right? You know, so we know that really taking care of people and allowing people to thrive is going to help all of us thrive. But it is, it's kind of the quiet one out there that people, if you look at the polling, right, people are unsure about it because no one's talking about it.
Well, that's why I'm asking this, that I know that, I mean, we have an aging population and, you know, in the U.S. in general. And how is this going to affect, I mean, how is this over time going to affect that? Is there going to be more demand on the system than we're putting into it? Or, you know, how does that work? That was the question. So anyway.
Yeah. All good reasons for us to stay engaged in our democracy and hold those elected leaders accountable.
Exactly.
Well, and all good factors that we're hoping that our listeners will
do the
research. Some consideration too and think about their own particular situation. Yeah.
And there's a heck of a lot of information on the internet. If you go out and you can just Google these initiatives and there's, you know, who's supporting it, who's not. I mean, what's the long-term effect? I mean, you get the whole gamut. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend.
Well, I think Let's Go Washington is about out of money at this point in the campaign. If you look at the last round of filings, people are still putting money into 2117. Mm-hmm. There's money still coming into 2109. And I think the LGW folks are just about out of their spend. Is that right?
And LGW being? Just want to clarify.
Let's get Washington.
And those are the people supporting the initiative, just to be clear.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's Brian Haywood's group that he created to front his money.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Well, Lennon, thank you again, of course, for being here. Any other questions on the initiatives? Bruce, you might have one.
Not so much on the initiatives, but your work in general. I mean, you're with the Washington Conservation Action. Tell us a little bit about that and what you do beyond initiatives and, you know, when you're not working politics.
Right. Politics. It's always politics. No, Washington Conservation Action, we just became Conservation Action just a few years ago. We were previously Washington Conservation Voters, but we've been around for about 50 years, really trying to bring policy and politics together to make sure we are having the best laws that benefit people and nature, that really it's not one or the other, but they coexist, and they're both stronger when both are doing well. We've been really focused over the last few years on really connecting with the communities most impacted by pollution and with native communities throughout the state to ensure that there's access to all the amazing resources that are out there, if people know where to look, and to also do that accountability and both for friends and opposition of, like, we can do more. It truly is this climate crisis that we are in, and there's not a lot of time. So people need to do a little bit more than they are comfortable with to make sure all the kids down at Chautauqua have something to do. Fight for when they are able to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And just one more question too, sort of like the classic Vashon question. How did you end up on the magical Isle of Vashon?
Oh, resistant. I grew up east of Bellingham and did not want to move back to a rural community, but my much smarter wife came out here for a couple different events, immediately fell in love with it, and told me this is the place we have to be, and I'm so happy to be here. It's a tremendous community, and it's so fun to have conversations like this, and even when we're talking with folks on the island who I don't agree with, there is a very nice level of respect. At least we will have a conversation. We're not shouters here. We are conversationalists, and it's lovely.
Sometimes we're shouters.
I was going to say, I was trying to come up with a rude comment there, but I just couldn't quite get there.
Well, I was going to do a shout out to Smarter Wives. So
yeah, there you go.
I'll go there. I take it that you have a website where people can find a way to get connected with the work you're doing.
Yes, it's waconservationaction.org. It's incredibly long. waconservationaction.org.
All right, go check it out. Or probably just a search on Washington Conservation Action might get you there.
That would get there too.
Yeah, so excellent. And I know there's a mailing list and so on. So if you get involved with the work that Lennon and his organization are doing. I've had the good benefit to be able to be introduced to the work you're doing probably 5 or 6 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might have been Martin Baker, actually,
yes.
Who made that connection. So. All right. Well, hey, we have a few more minutes to talk about some things that I don't think we've covered before on the Brown Briefly. And I'm going to start out by saying the debate. I don't think we've had a chance to talk about the debate. I'm just curious what people's like, what was most meaningful to you? What was most impactful? What was the most humorous? Or maybe what was the most thing that just sort of got under your skin? Anybody want to start?
I just love the mime out there that it's sort of like watching a cat lady with a laser, you know, jumping around
exactly.
And watching the cat trying to follow it. It was, she dominated the debate. It was very powerful, I thought.
Well,
and it gave you a sense of who she is.
It struck me as that she would cast that line out there, and boy, he would snap that baby up every time. And she would just smile, like, got him, you know? It really, I found that fascinating.
Chum on the water.
Exactly. Found that really fascinating.
You know, there were so many. I mean, there are 5 or 6 that we've seen over and over again since the debate. But two that don't come up quite as often was one, her handshake at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
That's an old trial lawyer's technique to dominate the room. Mm-hmm. You walk around the room, it becomes yours. And when she walked up to him, it was significant in many, many respects. Here's this black South Asian woman who's coming up to shake my... I thought that was fascinating, really well done. The other one is where she started to call him a name and then paused. You know, you may know this, but it was, a month or two before she had an interview where she was asked, what's your favorite swear word? And she says it starts with muh and it ends with er. At one point, she was talking during the debate, and she goes, now this muh, a former president. And I just got the biggest kick out of that.
How scripted is that?
Yeah,
that
there's a number of people I talked to that said she would have won the election right then and there. But unfortunately, it's not that simple, as we know from if the polls are anywhere close to being accurate.
That's right.
Well, obviously the dogs and the cats that are safe in our country right now. But I was, you know, being a good citizen and listening to NPR this morning, and, you know, they still have protective police in the schools in Springfield, Ohio, because of the bomb threats that have been called in. And, you know, it's stochastic terrorism alive and well, right? Mm-hmm. Just what they said, and then they doubled down, you know, like, fact-checking. They were trying to live fact-check him as much as they could, and they sure couldn't. But, you know, we're all reminded there's real-world consequences to what these folks are saying.
Mm-hmm. I will invite Lennon. Any reflections that you might want to share with us?
Oh, I thought the prosecutor took the convicted felon on really well and laid it out there. The most surprising line was, for me, was talking about gun ownership and pointing out that both Tim Walz and Kamala own a weapon, and I thought that really threw off the other side. Like, progressive people aren't supposed to do that, and they're just confused. And I think the voters clearly saw a very confused person versus someone with a plan. And the concept of a plan around healthcare was another funny line that was sort of like, ooh, can I use that at work? Yeah. I don't have a plan, but a concept. Does that count?
Yeah, armed Democrats. That's a spooky concept for a number of people. It's like armed cats.
He did talk to his base, though. I think in terms of I don't know that it actually moved any voters. That was what I kind of was the hard takeaway for me from the debate is I actually don't know if it moved any voters. I've heard people say, yeah, I think it did. I'm less optimistic about it, but
well, his base is not going to get moved. I don't care what, you know. I've talked to a couple of my friends, and I've said, given all of this, you know, BS that this guy's done, are you still? Oh yeah, I'm behind him all the way. It just blows me away.
I was a little surprised that she didn't call out that when he claimed that she was a fan of defund the police, that she didn't look and say, you know, I'm a former prosecutor. Sort of doesn't, that's oil and water. But Bruce, do you have a comment?
Oh, you know, I just thought, I've lost my thought, so.
But while we're here at the end of the show, you have, I believe, a guest coming on the show next week to talk to us.
I do. A couple weeks ago, we had Bruce Mercer and Jeff Hoyt talking about Passport to Pain. Well, next week we'll have Bruce Mercer back with us. And if you're not familiar with Bruce's work, you might want to Google him at some point. But also go down to the Vashon Center for the Arts at Center and look at his installation called Celebrating Center, which is just fantastic. And then head to the Heritage Museum, which is open 1 to 4 Wednesday through Sunday, and take a look at what will ultimately be interactive maps, historic maps of Vashon that Bruce Mercer put together. So we're going to talk about his career, his work as a graphic artist, and his work with history on Vashon Island.
We're going to need to come up with the wallet cards with the little squares, and you can get the stamped star of how many people have been on the Brown Briefly. I think we're going to have Bruce coming back. That's Lennon, you've been here at least one time before, if I recall right. I think you might have called in. at that one. At any rate, so I'm glad, listeners, that you were able to participate in the discussion today. Vote no on four initiatives on Washington's ballot. That's the big takeaway. For Lennon, Bruce, Amy, Craig, Truman, I'm Kevin, and we thank you for listening. We'll see you again next week on The Brown Briefly.